Hello, everyone. We are live this morning. I'm very excited for today's guest. Whoa, that is the wrong thing. Very excited for today's guest. And I think I've said that every day this week. And so that's probably beginning to be like, okay, that's all she says. However, today's guest is someone who I've known has existed in the world and the ecosystem, but I've never had the chance to speak to. And so it's just a serendipitous opportunity. So Genghis, I'm so excited that you joined us this morning. How are you?
Doing fantastic. It's one more day until the release from school, right?
Oh yeah. Mine was yesterday. So I know that all too well. Yeah. All right. So we talked a little bit before the call, which is great to get to know you. Before we dive into all the good sort of techie things, I asked you if there's anything that you're working on lately that's not techie, and you pointed to your shirt. So for those both on live stream, they can see it says Minnesota Strike. Anyone on the podcast won't be able to see that, but can you tell us what that is?
Yeah, Minnesota Strike is the professional women's and non-binary ultimate frisbee team from Minnesota. We've been around since 2016, I believe. But I've been with the team. This is my second year as an assistant coach. We travel around the country, play other teams, and we've got tryouts coming up in about a week and a half. So really looking forward to the season starting, coming downhill. Yeah, you know, I've coached high school for a decade. But it's really great to pick it up and coach at the elite level.
That is so cool. Can I ask, if you don't mind, what is sort of your interest or intrigue in that? Like, what do you feel like, how does that fulfill you?
Yeah. So coaching for me is the same as like how I manage, which like spoilers for anybody here who's ready to listen to the rest of this thing, but building teams, building cultures, and then building careers. And obviously in professional ultimate, career is sort of in quotation marks because it's not like professional ultimate pays you enough to be a day job,
right?
But building out our players from either the practice squad or reserve squad into full participating members of the team, working with our players who are in one role but are seeking a different one. In ultimate, we have the concept of handlers and cutters and O-line and D-line, and players who want to transition between that, being able to give them that feedback. And then also making sure that it's a fulfilling season for the fans is really cool. This is the only thing that's, I think, a little different from managing engineers is I had a player, Torrey Gray, last year, and they were asking about like a really risky throw that they have. That's fun. It's like a big arcing, like it looks like a home run ball or like a deep ball in football. And they kept asking me like, well, is it okay that I sent that there? Because like, I could have taken the easy swing. And I said, Torrey, you're an entertainer. If the crowd's going to go wild, even if it misses, that's what they paid to come see. And like being able to give players who are used to playing like so tight and focusing on perfection, the permission to like go ball out. That's a cool, different thing about the professional level that I've never had at high school, or obviously there's no equivalent in, in tech.
Sure. Wow. That's really cool. Okay. So that was fun. You alluded into a little bit of what you do. What's your job title and sort of like company or industry right now?
Yeah. I'm an engineering manager at Kipsu. I also keep doing the interview thing where I'm answering every question with yeah and jumping. So I apologize. I'll try to quell that. But I'm an engineering manager at a company called Kipsu here in the Twin Cities. I oversee three teams. One is our new markets team, trying to seize new areas, new verticals. One is our analytics team, so our data and our connections largely with our enterprise clients. And then also our accelerated engineering program, which is junior devs brought in sort of finishing school so that they can get moved to full application squads.
That is so cool. Wow. What an awesome opportunity. Okay. So Kipsu, I'm saying that again for anyone who's listening, has that really great program. That's cool. All right. Well, let's dive into the actual interview questions. And I'm super excited for this interview because it's going to be a little different than others, but honestly, really not. And I think there's going to be a lot of really great career insights. And with the developer listeners that join the show, I think it's going to be great. So let's start in. What's your official education?
So I have a bachelor's in archaeology and literature from Beloit College and a master's in cultural inquiry from the University of Birmingham in the UK. Obviously, then I went into software.
Oh, my God. Okay. So not to derail too much, but what did you want to, like, what was your original plan with sort of that degree and where you wanted to
go? Professional academic. I was on a professorial track. And, you know, I graduated from Beloit in 2007 and graduated from Birmingham in 2008. That's not special. Masters are only a year in the UK. That was the 2008 financial crisis. And so getting funding for your PhD was really hard. I often make the joke that the smartest thing I ever did was being too stupid to get funded for my PhD because like I would have been an adjunct professor hell, like now. To this day, I would have still been there. Like, I am not a big enough mind where I would have moved the world on research and gotten a like truly elite job. I would have been piecing together, like so many of my friends in academia are doing, piecing together roles across multiple colleges, community colleges, etc., to just like make ends meet like that. So again, I'm very grateful that my dream didn't work out there.
Yeah. Wow. That sounds stressful. Honestly, that'd be really hard.
I do not envy them that life.
Yeah. I have this passion for educators. Like, they're the basis of everything that we're capable of doing. And it really just is such a bummer that they don't, in my opinion, receive the compensation and the benefits and the opportunities that they deserve.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. All right. So I am excited to hear about what you do in your day-to-day role. I know you shared a little bit, in your sort of introduction, but like we talked about, my normal question is just to ask kind of what do you build and what's the stack that you build in, whether you're a leader or not, we break that down. And you shared something really insightful. So I would love to hear about your sort of day-to-day and how that leads into what you're quote unquote building, which is still, you're still building amazing things, but you're also, building really great teams. And I think that's super important. So I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, so Kipsu Stack is PHP, Knockout.js, and CoffeeScript, although that's becoming React. And then we've got TypeScript, Python for data stuff, Kotlin for new microservices. So we've got a wide spread here, and I interact with a lot of it. As far as hands-on coding, one of the very few things I do where I'm hands to keyboard is we've got a serverless CDK monorepo in TypeScript, TypeScript on the back end, TypeScript on the front end, TypeScript for infrastructure, which is really fun. Like, I know that we're trying to transition into the team question, but that actually does transition into the team question.
Yeah, because for sure.
One of the reasons that I really made sure that I kind of proved out that, like, look, I can still do this. I don't have engineer in my title. I always make the joke, like, I'm not an engineer when I'm in meetings. I like wave stuff off. But, proving out that like, this is approachable. I understand what your issues are. Here's how we create a developer experience as a way of creating culture on a team. I think that made all of the difference for especially this new markets living environments team that I mentioned because they're extraordinarily high performing and they're full stack. Our analytics team is high performing, but they're high performing in service.
Sure.
Where our living environments team is about application development. And that focus on developer experience, I think earning the trust that like, I understand what sucks about a long release process. I understand what sucks about being subject to DevOps and again, that is not, well, but like DevOps has a team. They're the first ones to tell you like DevOps is not a team, it's a culture.
Sure,
But being subject to other people's control of your ability to do your job is frustrating. And it's a necessary evil in a lot of places, but showing a team that I'm willing to invest and take risks in order to knock that down, give them that the tools for autonomy, not like, well, you get to make your choice in the refinement. You're like, of course you do. But being like, we put our money where our mouth is at Kipsu, and we allowed this team that has to go fast to go fast enough so long as they were meeting certain, NFRs that the company has. And to me, that's what started down the path of creating some of these high functioning teams here. On top of that, what I do is I'm building careers and building cultures. So I'm helping my engineers find not only what's next, but how do they make it so that it's inevitable when I talk to my boss that of course this person needs a promotion. And we can go into any detail on any of the 100 things I just gave you because I like to screw up interviewers that way.
I love that. And honestly, bring it on, because I think that these conversations always go in the direction where the guest takes them. And that's what's beautiful about them, right? Is like everyone is unique and has different things they're doing. So you shared with me sort of a three-pronged approach and that you were kind of throwing around. I'd love to hear more about that. And I think so would the listeners.
Yeah. So, I think one thing that I tell anybody that I'm mentoring, whether they work for me or not, is that the hardest transition in tech is going from no tech job to your first tech job. Like that is always the hardest transition. breaking in, having any credibility. It's like actually a little heartbreaking from an equity perspective that even just having a job title from a tech company on your resume turns it from a, you know, a buyer's market to a seller's market, or however you want to think about it, of like that foot in the door makes all the difference. And that's brutal. So that's the hardest transition. The second hardest transition is moving from senior engineer to a question mark.
Oh, yes, I agree with this.
Because first of all, a lot of managers don't know how to develop high performers further in their career. They know how to give them technical direction or like technical, you know, craft perfection, which could be okay for like a principal engineer track. But that's a lot of managers, that's where they stop. What I like to focus on is I think of those three prongs that you mentioned when I'm talking to people. And you know, nothing's actually just three, but like this is a good heuristic. First is that management track that everybody thinks about, but there's plenty of books. You know, Will Larson has Staff Engineer, which is a great book for folks who want like leadership outside the technical track, because I actually think, or leadership outside the management track is what the title is. But like, so that manager role, great. If you want to people manage and project manage, and I actually have a direct who is very dear to me, and she was talking about like, is this all there is to web dev? And they're like, you've been in this industry for a year and a half. What do you mean? And she's like, well, it's pushing data and displaying it and tweaking the data and then worrying about performance. Like, what are the other things that we deal with? I'm like, it's pretty broad strokes, but yeah, that's it. her face just got so drawn, and she's like, oh, I know I'm just going to get bored with that. And it's like, great. That's actually good for me to hear.
Yeah.
Management lets you touch other parts of the business. So you start dealing with different categories of problems. Some of them are annoying, but like if you need to jump from category to category and you think like business holistically, management's a great track.
Yep.
If you really love just people specifically, it can be, but there's some other stuff in the other two that I can go into. Because I think the second prong is architecture. Architect, and this could be staff engineer, but this is or principal engineer, but like I think of it as just like mega dev.
Got it. Yep.
And so this is setting standards and examples for teams. This is setting technical direction, knocking down those big boulders so teams can break them down. And also facilitating growth on your teams from a technical perspective. When you have a very non-technical manager like me, I rely on my my staff engineer, Evan. I always talk about him as like a startup architect because that's what he does. He is the one who the team relies on for like technical direction and like, oh shit, something's happening. Call Evan. You know that.
Yep.
And so there's that architecture path, which can turn into leadership or can turn into technical direction, but it keeps you close to the deliverable, to the systems.
Yeah.
And then the last one that I talk about, and I don't know why I've been on like a kick about this the past few months, but I think a lot of people transition into tech because of the earning potential. That is, again, I talked about equity earlier. I think there's a lot of people who are trying to cross a generational wealth gap that they have with people who look and sound like me, and who those people who don't have a lot of trouble with that. Yeah. A way to really maximize that income can be sales engineering, solutions architecture. This idea that you can have a very technical role that is commission-based and uses social skills as well in order to go well beyond just like, I want to build apps and be subject to the product team or something. This is a way of getting deep with customers, having measurable, you know, you succeeded because of a commission structure, a quota. And like, I hadn't realized there were engineers who would really be driven by that and had never been exposed to it. They've never learned that like, I can have, if I do good enough, I get a bigger check. And like, I am the last person to think that you need a like rah-rah kumbaya everything, but there's a satisfaction for some people in, you know, like me, the Google talks about meaning and impact in Project Aristotle, and the meaning and impact can be, I can provide for my family in the, like in the largest way possible that then allows me to take risks later, or from some people I've talked to allows my children to take the risks in their life because I can be their background. So I really just don't want people to ignore the sales engineering and solution path. So that's my little rant.
I love it. And I loved it when we were sort of pre-chatting, but you shared and expanded even more. And I think what's really interesting, and this is sort of a side thing for me, is like, I very much have an engineering mind, and I'm more in a business marketing, go-to-market sort of strategic role now, but I'm constantly trying to problem solve. And my, this is a personal side thing, but my husband and I were watching Suits. We didn't watch it when it first came out. We like binged it later. And so it was not that long ago. And I was like, gosh, some days I was like, I kind of wish I would have been an attorney, because it's so black and white. You won the case or you lost the case. And I am called a motivational dimension of an achiever. And so I do things to win. I want to reach that end result, and I want to get everyone there and like make sure that that achievement is done. And I was like, gosh, wow. The attorney thing was so appealing. But then when you just explained solutions architecture, which to me also is very much like developer relations too, without the commission and maybe some other sort of, you know, being more community driven, right? That it's like, wow, actually there really is something in the developer sort of and technical space where you're like an attorney, right? You either like get that commission or you don't, or you solve that problem or you don't. Where I feel like as engineers, like, yes, we get that achievement, especially as long as we've got our tickets appropriately built and we're considering looking at those things in that way. But it's like you do one and you move on to the next one, and you don't necessarily always get to sort of celebrate and really absorb the fact that like, oh, hey, I won that case, or I, you know, accomplished that thing. So I love how you called that out.
Yeah. One of the things that I really have, again, like I get like language and memes in my head about this stuff, but I talk about alignment with teams all the time, alignment and autonomy. Mm-hmm. And alignment is very like, every executive thinks that if I just in a meeting say the words enough, that's alignment. And like that can be, but it's actually about aligning incentives. And so for engineers, it's can I, you know, for the like senior and below engineers, it's can I align interesting work, the next thing that you want to grow, usually technically, with if we succeed here, you will get more of that. Great. So that's one thing. For management, it's aligning the growth of teams. It's aligning, like, how does your team perform? You get more either people, teams, you know, scope of influence, whatever. But then for that, like, solutions architect, sales engineer, your alignment is business objective is this much revenue. Got it.
Okay.
How can I directly affect that?
Yeah, right. It's crystal clear. It's very focused. Yeah. All right. Interesting. So I have so much more that I really want to tap into, but what is and you did allude to this a little bit, but I think it'd be nice to hear about this too, especially with the dynamic of your role and how you're very much focused on the building that like high performing team, which I think is, you don't always find that, right? So when you're looking for a leader of a team, it's, you look for a variety of different things, but I don't often see the mention of, you know, managing high performing teams, bringing in high performers. And to me, that's been sort of an essence of teams that I very much valued and appreciated, is when I could like spot and identify that other fellow high performer and be able to really partner up and do great work. So I would love to hear about sort of your day to day. And I think, what are some of the, maybe the challenges and other things that you work through as you go through your day to day as a manager, both technically and non-technically?
So I think one thing that is the most difficult vis-a-vis performance on a team is titling and where people came in, because you can only really hire somebody based on the interview and references, right? Like it's all, I used this phrase earlier, but it's all heuristics.
Yeah.
It's what kind of will it be like to work with this person? But like I've got a high performer on one of my analytics teams whose title looks lower, I think maybe than everybody else. I don't know, but like the titling is not commensurate with the value she's bringing to the company. And so it's about like, part of what I have is like, how do I grow her in a way that is giving her the challenges she wants and the, you know, exposure to new technologies and keep building her resume so that I can make the better argument for promotion without feeling like, how do I grow and give that opportunity without feeling like I'm exploiting, right?
Sure,
like
sure.
That's one of the things that's a hard balance, is like, I want to give more responsibility, but like, can I reward it? And so like making sure, as I mentioned, that I'm getting the alignment on incentives. So like, how do we do, you know, pay decisions? How do we do, are there bonus decisions that can be made? Can we retitle or reorg, whatever? That kind of stuff is one of the first things that is difficult as an engineering manager, is when somebody isn't a senior or a staff level engineer and you start seeing the rocket ship engine start firing. Well, how do you make sure that that rocket doesn't get pointed at a different company? And so like that's the, and again, the way you do that is by being very transparent and working to understand what the levers that are getting pulled, even if you don't have control of them.
Sure.
So what are the levers that get pulled for pay, title, et cetera? And then exposing the gap, because generally I found that executives are, you know, I say executive, my boss and grand boss.
grand boss.
Yeah. Like, how do they view risk, and how do I make them understand that this gap is a risk in our ability to continue to deliver, serve customers, but like even just keep that engineer, right? Like I usually don't have to abstract it that far. It's just like, this person rules, we've got to miss. How do we align these incentives, but keep it equitable, so it's not just like the loudest good person gets them.
Right.
Anyway, and that is very much about just understanding what motivates the people above me and showing them how this, treating this person right, is going to get the next, the next step for them and the things that they care about most.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but that's a hard thing to do. Like executive alignment and having those coming your face. For those in the podcast, he made a very, very distinct face of, yeah, it sure is. Do you have tricks, tips?
I mean, it's easy because I'm a white dude in tech. So like I tend to look and sound a lot like the people I'm talking to. So I get the trust is sort of like two steps easier for me. Sure. But yeah, my tips and tricks are finding out in conversation what is the thing that is causing my boss or my grand boss heartburn? Like if they're stressed, go have a fact-finding mission. And this is true even if you're talking to, if I'm your manager talking to me about it, if you notice I'm stressed, be curious about that. And if it's life stuff, like cool, be a human and like be an ear. But if it's work stuff, because it usually will be, take note of if there are recurring times that heartburn happens for them.
Smart.
Because aligning what you want, this is very manipulative, but it's also real. Aligning what you're trying to get out of your team or yourself or for yourself with a solution to that heartburn is going to not only endear you to them, but it's going to show a contextual awareness that is a level beyond take ticket to ticket that is going to make you stand out. So to me, it is about tapping into sort of what are the hot points, the hot zones, and finding where you can align something you want with solving that. Because if you don't, you're just sort of hoping for goodwill.
I agree. I think that's actually really, really, I mean, that's great advice. Honestly, like watching their stress levels, I think that's really smart because there's always something to that, right? Yeah. And I never thought about it like that. The way that I approach it is whenever I ensure that I have my, one-on-ones or my time that I can check in with those types of leaders. And I always ask their ruthless priorities. What are the things that they're ruthlessly focused on? Which is great. But sometimes if you don't have that relationship with that leader, they won't speak to the negative sides of it. They'll just tell you where they're going and not necessarily tell you why they're stressed. And so I think maybe two-pronged approach, right? Of thinking about where do they want to go, but also what is that heartburn and why is it there? I think that's smart.
Well, and so the way you can also kind of, and this is to maybe answer a question you haven't asked yet, and it's like, how do you get a promotion? But this is actually relevant to how you can feel out where you can be most useful is I talk about succession planning with every member of my team.
That's amazing.
Usually if they're more junior, it doesn't come up for almost a year, but
you
need to start succession planning for yourself in order to make it an inevitability that you're going to be promoted. Not out of like, protect the organization. Hey, I love my company, but I don't expect everyone to, right?
Like,
yes, I will go way above and beyond for Kipsu because I believe in what we do. But like, I've also worked for like a financial institution that was making PDF forms that pushed out. I didn't care that much about that one. but like doing that succession planning for yourself, first of all, teaches you how to teach. It gives you all that mentorship stuff that everybody's like, I want to mentor people. You make sure you're not the only one who knows how to do anything. Right. But if you're doing that succession planning and you can demonstrate that, when you bring that information to your boss about as something you are actively doing, at the very least, you put into their head, this person is thinking about the future. And also, damn, how am I succession planning? Because like, your boss may not be doing it.
I just had that thought myself. So absolutely.
And that can get you brought in behind the curtain. I've got a guy, Doug, on my analytics team, who effectively is always just like, how are you doing that? What's that meeting about? What, like, how do you make this decision? And it's really good for him to remind me that I need to get those skills down into my team.
Yes, that's good too. You know, the other piece that sort of brings that up, and maybe you have tips here too, is, you know, succession planning to me sounds a lot like sort of taking hold of your personal, you know, career and just having that, those goals and those aspirations and really working towards what you want to work towards. Is that accurate? That's what I'm getting out of it.
Yeah.
So on top of that, it, to me, it seems like, a bit and piece of that is like, how can that play into the business? Right. And so I think that's like the beautiful synergy of what you're sharing here is like that succession planning can align so much to these, this is the type of work I want. Maybe the web dev that you talked about, that's like, okay, is this it? Yeah. Okay. Well, clearly that person needs more, right? Like what, how can you deliver that? And then they can be self-aware. And then, like you said, get more involved in the business. So I think those two are just so beautiful together when you think about that succession planning and understanding the business.
It also is something that even non-technical leaders, so you think COO, CEO, even like CIO in some companies, where like they kind of know tech stuff, but like it's kind of like a wider ownership level. Like talking about succession planning is something that shows that you know, like you're speaking their language. Oh, yes, that's a problem in all spheres, everywhere, always, forever. I worked in emergency medicine for 6 years. And one of the biggest conversations that was coming up was like, how are we succession planning for paramedic educators? Because everybody is, and they, I am not speaking outside, telling tales outside of school, for the record. This is literally what EMS talks about, is we're all overweight, we all smoke, and we all try to outdrink each other. And so it's like old people in their 60s and 70s who have lived that life, teaching the next generation and not teaching teachers. They don't succession plan. And so it, like, there was a almost a crisis in the mid-teens here, 20-teens, talking about that, about like, what happens when, you know, Jeffy at Invergrove Heights retires? Who teaches those classes?
Oh, wow. That's a huge gap and a problem.
Yeah. And it's true in business. Like CEOs have to think about like, can I retire? Well, my COO doesn't have the vision. Can I teach them vision? Do I get, you know, and it goes all the way down the chain.
Yep.
Hey, I've got that staff engineer, Evan. All right. Well, he's looking to like, how can I take multiple teams? This team needs you. So until you get a couple of engineers to do what you do and to understand what you're doing, you can't move to the next role.
Yep.
But if it's simple and they all do it already, it's going to be obvious. Like, all right, Evan's a lot of horsepower for a team that doesn't need all of it. Let's make sure we're using him across multiple. Anyway, trying to get those conversations, they really speak across domains.
Yeah. And there's a lot of self-awareness in that, right? Where like sometimes there's hard, to be frank, sometimes it's hard to manage developers because they're very opinionated. Yeah. They're strong personalities. They're smart, right? But if you can allow them to sort of be self-aware of their own sort of existence and the role that they play and how important that they are, while also aligning that to their succession plan, right? Like, yeah, you might want to shift teams, but you also wanted to serve this purpose and to lead these types of people and to show that level of leadership in your engineering role, right? So it's like, no, this is beautiful. You wanted this. Help this team. And you've accomplished this ladder on your succession plan. And then, you know, we can shift you over to your next challenge, essentially. So I really love this. Do you have resources or blog posts or content or anything that you write?
I have an oft-neglected blog, but any incentive to do it, milkywayfarers.com.
That's adorable. I love that.
Yeah, it's named after, it's a meme with the company that I got laid off from. Don't worry about it. I do write about experimental cultures that experiment. And I've got a series of blogs that I need to finish up about how to consciously create team culture, how to build a team, to a mission, to an alignment. So that's really all I've got. I have the succession planning thing is just because I'm old and I've been in a lot of industries that have had problems with it. Tech has problems with it. I think it's a universal problem. That's why it speaks to the CEO, hears you care about this, your line dev. It's like, hold on, she knows what's up.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the kind of thing you're always looking for.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I would encourage you, I personally would love to see it, but I would strongly encourage you to create something if you're open to it. If you have a template or even just a sort of framework or anything, because I do really think that a lot of people can benefit from this concept. And like I kind of made the side comment, tech does have this problem. Like we just have grown so quickly and the leadership and the HR infrastructure is just not good in tech. And I've been in other industries and, you know, some of us have even worked in bigger corporate, right? I worked at General Mills in Minneapolis. It's like a completely tech, but a non-tech company. And you get to see good HR and good, you know, succession planning and good career tracks and ladders that are crystal clear and make sense. And they might annoy you because they're corporate, but at least you know how and where to go. And so I think, you know, I'm ranting now and rambling, but I think the world could use your succession planning insights as well.
Okay. Well, I will do what I can. Hopefully this is a start for some people.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe there's a whole conversation we can start from all of this. Everyone can start submitting their own sort of, it's like hopes and dreams, right? What are your devs' hopes and dreams and how do you create that into a career plan? Okay, so I've got kind of one more major question and then we can kind of just see where that takes us and we're at nearing time here. But this is a question I love to ask for developers, but also for people who are building tools and building products that developers might want to use. It's just insightful to understand where do devs go? How do they think through this process? So even though you're not necessarily writing a ton of code in your day-to-day, you're still solving challenges and you're also helping people solve those challenges. Mm-hmm. So when someone is on your team or when you're personally stuck or you're looking to expand and obtain new tools or resources or bring in something that solves a challenge, what's sort of your hierarchy of steps and where do you go and how do you go about that?
The first thing I actually want to call out is I had to do this with one of my most junior devs, like 21 years old, 2 months, not only like 4 months out of college, 2 months out of their parents' house kind of thing.
That's hard.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You're just like learning to be an employee, like to live in the
exist.
World.
Yeah. Yes.
But one of the things that he mentioned is he's like using ChatGPT and Claude for various things, right? Like using LLMs. And I think that is great as you become more senior. Sure. I would urge, and I do urge, my more junior engineers to avoid relying too heavily on LLMs to start.
Yep.
It's not because I think that they're going to poison the well or give you wrong. You can figure out if it's going to run or not. Like, I'm not actually that worried about that. What I'm worried about is not understanding a categorical way of thinking through questions.
Yes.
If you're outsourcing the way you conceive of a problem, you are now subject to the model as opposed to using the model for yourself. So early in your career, struggle bus, get a literal physical rubber duck and talk to it in a room. I'm not kidding. Like that is the biggest piece of advice I have for young devs is you are not thinking about your code the way you think you are because you were hot shit in college or you've made some fun stuff. But what you're doing is writing code for other people. And not just a machine. Usually most of us don't work in stuff. We're writing the millisecond better performance on a machine matters even a little bit, right? Like it's CRUD operations in a front end. It's again, it's what Lisa asked, is this it? Yeah. and so like learning how to talk yourself through your code from different perspectives. Okay. If I'm talking to Genghis and my title on Slack is usually an actual stupid person. If you're talking to Genghis about your code, how would you do this? Great. Now, if you're talking to Evan, the elite level staff engineer I have, how would you talk to him about this code? And do it multiple times. Don't just walk through your code, say, it's doing this. Explain what the function is doing. Explain where this method is. Explain why you're transforming data or why you don't have to cast a type in a dynamic language, right? Explain those to stupid Genghis and then explain it to Evan, right? And anyone in between. That's so like, I know that this is not exactly what you were asking, but I think
this is great
to not find external tools, but to get better with the tool you already have. And then once you kind of know how to do that and you have a good ability to see from multiple lenses now, hell yes. I yell at one of my other, like a 25-year-old dev that I have, who's not that old or anything. Why aren't you asking ChatGPT? Why aren't you asking an LLM when you got stuck here? Cause like your team wasn't able to help you. You did the fractal image thing. Couldn't find it. Now go check the tool.
Yeah.
That to me is like the difference is like, you need to master the question asking, not prompt writing. It's not like it's a discrete tool, but like the brain shift around how am I thinking of the problem and then use those tools. I think that's the most important lesson people can take of like the current form of how you're going to build your career and skills as an engineer.
I love that so much. There was a post the other day that someone had said, what do you think? I don't remember the framing of the question, but they essentially were asking, what do you think is going to be, who's going to get catapulted by Cursor, by Bolt, by AI, by all these different sort of tools, right? And I actually really sat down and I thought about it and I was like, junior devs are not going to get catapulted by it. And they might think that they are, and they might suddenly be able to build something. But then as soon as that breaks, they're going to be like, oh crap, I don't actually know how I built this. And so I don't know how to go troubleshoot it and fix it. Yes, yes. For those on the podcast, very big arm gestures around, yes, absolutely. Obviously agree. So where I landed is I felt that it was actually going to accelerate middle level, that 25 year old that you said, right? Because they've got the systems, they've got the foundation, you know, they haven't been utilizing it to get through that base. They understand systems, they can troubleshoot and solve problems. But in the mid level, you just haven't been able to solve the even bigger challenges, but your rudimentary skills are there. So I felt that was the case. I never actually went back to see what the other responses were, but I'm curious, like, if you agree, or if you think even maybe later, maybe senior, I'm not sure, but I'm feeling mid-level.
I definitely feel like seniors benefit from it. Seniors and staff,
sure, for
because they're past that point. But yeah, it is that mid-level where it's like, what weird syntactical sugar, or there's a, you know, it's actually less of a thing these days. I'm old enough that the idea that programming languages are effectively patching themselves as quickly as they do is wild to me. But like peculiarities of a specific part, like way Python 2 worked. Well, it's a bug, but we've kind of used it as a feature, or like we're leveraging it now. That, you know, just like shit like that happened all the time back in the day.
Yep.
And like that still exists. It's just, you know, it tends to now be more conscious because we can so rapidly iterate. But like, I do think that getting past like to the point of like the annoyances of a language and a solution are in your bones the way they are for that 14-year staff engineer who's just like, oh shit, okay, we're working in this part of the code base, hold on. Like, we're gonna need to consider this queue or whatever. You know, I'm just making shit up. But so like that 25-year-old, it's not that they don't have the potential skills to get there. It's that like, I would like to offload the trauma to ChatGPT.
Yes, yes, so, yes. That was my thought too.
And then everything else is still skills you have to develop in yourself.
Yes, yep, I agree. Wow, this has been so great. I am so bummed that we didn't get to hang out when I did live in Minneapolis. We very much think a lot alike. Amy spoke so, so highly of you. And so I always was like, whoever this Genghis person is, he is way up here. And she did not
disappoint. Actual stupid person. Actual stupid person. Don't let me pull the wool over your eyes.
You are a very humble, kind person who really likes to help people succeed. Honestly, that's really clear to me. And honestly, like if I'm Kipsu, very lucky to have you, but I'm sure that there are many people that would love to have someone like you on their team. You know, people like you and like Mike was on the show a few days ago for anyone who wants a very similar interview with a really similar, awesome human. I'm just so appreciative in the tech industry for people like you, because not only are you, you know, building beautiful teams and changing and rippling the sort of toxic dynamics that we're missing in that executive and HR and some of that stuff that we just aren't doing so well. But you're also really helping provide the diversity to technology. Both of you have, you know, made numerous comments passively and in pre-shows around supporting others who are not like you. And I think that that's just such a beautiful and important thing. So anyways, I'm going to stop ranting about how great you are.
I'll always take it.
Yeah. Where can people find you? Obviously, you shared your blog. If you want to share that again, so folks can make sure that they find that if they didn't catch that commentary, if anywhere else, if they can find you or any parting words you'd like to share.
Yeah, LinkedIn is the easy one for like work MySpace. MilkyWayfarers.com is the blog. I'm on Twitter as I think Hawksfire. I'm Genghis on Blue Sky. There's not a lot of Genghises, especially not a lot of white dudes named Genghis. You'll find me. And my parting comment, I think, is just like be that succession planning, even outside of your job, in communities. I feel like the reason I'm on this show actually is Casey Allen, who's definitely not my mentor, but is a great member of this community. He does so thanklessly, does so much work for folks. And that's become something that I've tried to model. I'm one fraction of anything Casey does, but like I try to do that for other people. And I think that succession planning is important even in communities, maybe even more so.
Yep.
And so when you're in a position, you know, for those of you who aren't starting out in dev right now, those of you who are more senior, think about like what helped you in the community, be it blogs, meetups, whatever, and try to make it so it's easier for somebody else to have access to that now, because that we are it, right? Like there's nobody coming to do this for us. That's my rant.
I so deeply agree. And I also want to echo the kind words about Casey. I met him one time, beautiful opportunity, was so lucky to. And he has just continued to be really fruitful, and for no reason. He has no skin in my game. There's no reason for him to care, but he just continues to care, and obviously brought you to the show. So amazing human. So we're talking about Casey Allen out of Minneapolis. If anyone wants to find him, he's on most of the socials, but I'd say LinkedIn is where he's the strongest. Just an amazing human being, and strongly recommend that you go track him down. Genghis, this has been so great. I'm so thankful for you. I hope that you have an amazing Christmas, hopefully low stress for all of us right over this next Christmas and dealing with family, but also hopefully enjoying everything that is beautiful about the holidays and spending time. So I hope you have a great day.
You too. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.